Off the Ball Rugby.
I question that theory, and I wonder, come the biggest games, whether it will be the undoing of Leinster, as in the end it was in the final, because Toulouse are taking their game on.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Daily.
And you're welcome to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to seven. We hope you're doing great around the country. What has come up today in the show? Well, Manchester United are certainly not boring under their new coach, Ruben Amorim, whether it's a pleasant surprise or a calamity. The visit of free-flowing Brighton today should signal goals. It's the first of two live and exclusive commentaries we have for you this afternoon. Kick-off at Old Trafford is at 2. Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr will describe the action. Our other commentary game today is Ipswich Town versus Manchester City, with Richie McCormack and Vinnie Purse to provide the call on that one from 4.30. It's AIB All-Ireland Club Finals Day. Our GA correspondent Tommy Rooney will be across the football showpiece between Coola and Derek O'Ciaran, which throws in at 3.40. We'll also be live to Croke Park as well to look ahead and get reports on Athena against Sarsfields in the Hurling Decider with our reporter Jonathan Higgins. Later on as well, we'll play at the best of the Sunday paper review, which Adrian Barry recorded earlier on with Conan Byrne and Megan Scully. The podcast of that is up very shortly wherever you get your pods. If you want to get in touch with the show today, you can 087-9180-180 on WhatsApp. That is 087-9180-180. Or you can also text us 53106 at a cost of 30 cents. Adrian Barry is with me in studio with Anne-Marie Donlan for the news round. How are we both?
Good morning, Jedi. Anne-Marie.
Afternoon.
Was this a vintage day for sports writing, or was this just a regular Sunday?
Somewhere in between, probably. I find the days where there's an awful lot of live sport on, there aren't a huge amount of features necessarily in the Sunday papers, which sometimes can make, let's give everybody an insight into what happens behind the scenes here. Obviously, the more features, the better when it comes to Sunday paper review. But it's not been a bad day. A few bits and pieces. Noel Hunt has done an interview with Paul Rowan of the Sunday Times, Reading manager. People obviously remember from his time at Ireland, Reading legend. Spent a lot of time in Scottish football as well. But interesting stuff there. The disputed goal in Barry between himself and Robbie
Keane. I was thinking
Keane
that before you said it.
Comes up. Like, it's probably something that's going to be mentioned to him every single time he does an interview for the remainder of his days. Still disputed.
I had a row with another kid about whether I scored a goal at the Mini World Cup, and these things never leave you. We were playing for Mexico at the time.
And was it as disputable as the 2E taking the decisive action at the same time?
I just remember it, that we both thought we scored the goal.
And who won the row?
I don't think anybody would want to.
What did the record book say, Jetty? That's what we need to know.
Did you ever play the Mini World Cup?
No, I didn't.
I never played, but I have kids playing.
Great
the
idea.
World Cup now, yeah.
And you have your teams, Brazil or Mexico or Ireland or England or whatever.
So that's a good piece. It's worth checking out. There's a lot of writing, obviously, about the club championship of the day that's in it. Eamon Sweeney's got a very good
that's
piece.
That's a lovely piece, isn't it?
Really good piece, which I think cuts to the core of what club is all about. There's a uniqueness to it that, and an unlikeliness to it that I think is not repeatable, not possibly repeatable in any other sport. Like, we talked about Shelburne winning the League of Ireland, Armagh winning the All-Ireland final. Like, they're not really the same, because it's not the less, as unlikely as they were, it's not as unlikely as a club who basically, give or take population and resources, but you're kind of starting at the same line. And there's an unlikeliness of the whole thing. So some lovely writing on that. And Joe Brawley writes, probably he's got the quote of the day, JD, if you want to give it to you here. Across all the pages, battle of brothers set to decide destination of the title. So it's the O'Callaghans versus the Canavans is how he's pitching this, and he talks about the whole story. But it's the closing couple of paragraphs here that I'll give you that sort of clinch it for me, where he talks about Peter Canavan particularly, and the difference between Peter and his sons is that Peter was not markable. He was a mean-spirited dog of war on the field whose only concern was victory. For him, his ego demanded the success of his team. Unlike his two boys, he did not smile or laugh or exude joy on the field like the great leaders from Bill Russell to Roy Keane. For Peter, it was a misery until it was all over and they had won. His boys are like carbon copies of him physically, two-footed, two-handed, with the elusiveness of greased ferrets. But they've yet to demonstrate his character. If they pass that final Olympian test today, Erga Kiran will win and they can take their place beside God the Father.
God the Father.
That's it. They play with a sense of joy and freedom that he perhaps didn't necessarily play with. Yeah.
I never thought about Peter in those terms because he was just such a joy to watch. I never thought about whether he was enjoying himself or not.
Well, there was kind of that dogged sense to him, yeah. But they can do something today that he has not done, which is kind of an interesting quirk. He obviously never won the club championship. So obviously they want to repeat his success with the county, but it's kind of interesting that they can do something today he's never done.
Well, let's check in with our reporter Jonathan Higgins ahead of the AIB All-Ireland Club Hurling Final between the Athena of Dublin and Cork Sarsfields. How are you, Jonathan? No, Jonathan, we're still waiting for him to check in from Croke Park. I'm kind of thinking to myself how hard it is for these clubs to get here in the first place. Like, you got to get through your... Like, Coole had never won a football until this year in Dublin. Then you get through the province, and then you get to the All-Ireland final. And then for a team to lose today, as
it's such a long
beautiful
way back,
that
yeah.
the journey has been, to lose today is tough because it's so hard to get there. You know your club, Saltiel Knocklacarra, won an All-Ireland.
Yeah, and Adrian talks about the unlikeliness of it, because when you start out at the beginning of a season, obviously the first step is to win the county, and that's such a major step. And then you kind of feel like you're almost in bonus territory. And we're going to have two new winners here today. And yeah, I obviously got to enjoy Saltiel winning this. But when Saltiel won the Galway Championship back in 2005, they had lost the previous year, 2004, to Pádraig Joyce's Killarearen. So it kind of felt like they just had to get over that line to win the county. And then everything after that was bonus territory. They just went on this really unlikely run in Connacht. And then they beat Kilmacud Crokes in the semi-final. And then they won the final. But it was just the unlikeliness of it. It was like this magic journey that you just never expected. And they went on that, and kind of the excitement took over everybody. It was just so unlikely. And obviously I was quite young when Galway won their two All-Irelands that I've been alive for. I was 6 and 9, so I didn't fully appreciate the gravity of it. So this was kind of the first big GAA success that I remember fully getting on board with and understanding what it was. And it was a really special day. And I know the split season is very important, but there was something very special about it being on St. Patrick's Day. It just added to it, you know, getting the train up, and it gave it that bit more gravitas. But yeah, whoever wins today, Coole or Errigal Kieran or Sarsfields or Nafina, they're in for a really brilliant time, because it's obviously the first time any of these are going to do it. So they should. And as you say, it's a long, long way back if you don't win. So whoever does win today, they should savour it. Because I think it was the O'Shea's, wasn't it? They got to the All-Ireland final with Ventry. I can't remember who they lost to, but they never got the chance to do
it
again.
Was it Carrick Finn?
And it's still...
They might have lost on Gaeltacht. I'll check that out.
Or sorry, on Gaeltacht. It still irks them. I remember Tomás O'Shea in his book still wrote about that. The two things that annoy him. He never got a chance to repeat that, and he never beat Tyrone.
It was Caltra that beat them. Caltra.
Oh yeah, sorry. It was Caltra from Galway.
That's the great beauty of live radio, is we can try it another time. And Jonathan Higgins, are you there now?
I am indeed, John. Welcome to a Chilly Crow Park.
And this is going to be an emotional day, because neither team has ever won an All-Ireland hurling title before, in Nafina of Dublin and Cork Sarsfields.
It certainly is. It's a day for the pub quiz is almost, John, isn't it? Like first-time winners, special moments. We've seen both sides have really memorable moments over the course of the year, whether that's coming back from losing Cork, Sarsfields losing the Cork final, but just getting the ship back up on the road, and that victory over Fecal turns out to be probably the moment of their season when he's made the changes, Johnny Crowley. And of course then as well we've seen Nafina. Just how dramatic was that Dublin final victory, and of course the drama in Thurlaston as well, John. This is what the club is all about, these special moments.
It would have been known as a football club, Nafina, in the city of Dublin. They reached an All-Ireland football decider a quarter of a century ago, but now hurling, a bit like the opposite of Coole, has taken centre stage.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And what I find ironic as well is anytime you speak to Neil, the Nafina manager, he's always referenced, oh, we were back in the club, we had the club final, we lost it, but they kind of, the bit of heritage that they built up in the club, and they'll have the march over. They had a load of events over the weekend, as well as indeed nearly every club has. But you're right, it is amazing how things have flipped around. And like, you go back to that 2000 team that had, you know, the likes of Kieran McGainey involved in it. They were super. I remember just being in awe of them as a kid, looking at the amount of players and high caliber players that they had. But they've transferred across to the small ball now as well, and they're out here warming up in front of me. And you know, it's just special because there's so much talk, isn't there, about the club, and you get the default, the traditional rural club. But the city clubs, and no more it's for than Fina and Coole, have certainly done their bit to get that special pride in the local area, and they're here in GAHQ.
Huge club, Nafina in Dublin, and the best of luck to Shane Coleman today, our News Talk Breakfast presenter. He's got his fingers crossed as a Nafina member. Sarsfields, the club of the late great Teddy McCarthy, the dual Cork star, and a brilliant article by Dennis Walsh in the Irish Times yesterday for the weekend edition about Sarsfields, and Dermot O'Sullivan is involved in the coaching there. And it's been, what, I think 16 years since Cork have had a team in the final?
Yeah, it's ironic, John. I was looking back at kind of just doing some prep for this, and I was looking back at my notes for the Fecal game. All the talk prior to that Munster semi-final was Cork side's records are just absolutely terrible in the knockout stages. They hadn't won a game in forever. But they've got that monkey off their back, and I suppose Cork hurling is on a rise. We've seen the inter-county side, and we've seen Sarsfields now, and that game against Ballygunner, I think that was the result, John, wasn't it? We all saw that and went, wow, this is something special being generated here.
Okay, Jonathan, we'll have to leave it there. We're going to touch base later on during this club final. Half one start for Nafina of Dublin against Sarsfields of Cork. Then 3:40 for the football final between Argyll Kieran of Tyrone and Dublin side Coola. Let's check in now with our match commentator, Stephen Doyle, ahead of our first Premier League game of the day. Manchester United against Brighton. How are you, Stephen?
I'm in great form. Thank you very much, John. I'm actually just a little bit disappointed. I missed the finals because, as Anne-Marie said there, St. Patrick's Day used to be a great occasion. Lovely feature day in the GAA calendar, and I used to, even as a neutral, loved heading up there and going to see the matches on Paddy's Day. But unfortunately, now that it's on a Sunday in January, we're on duty. But we should have a brilliant occasion, I think, at Old Trafford.
Yeah, that's obviously a sad week with the passing of Dennis Law. I see some changes in the Manchester United team from the Southampton win.
Yes, indeed. There's in fact three changes on both sides, John. Manchester United coming out 3-1 victors against Southampton on Thursday night at Old Trafford. A dramatic finish, and a man who's making himself a hero at Old Trafford, the man who got all the goals, Amad Diallo, he starts. But the youngest hat-trick scorer for Manchester United since Wayne Rooney, the second youngest ever, and the first man to get a hat-trick for United since Cristiano Ronaldo bagged one against Norwich City a couple of seasons ago. And he really is becoming a bit of an iconic figure now at Manchester United. Still a long way to go for him to become, reach the echelons of the likes of the great Dennis Law. But three changes to that team. Harry Maguire, Diogo Dalot and Xerxes all restored to the starting lineup. Harry Maguire comes in for Lisandro Martinez at centre-half. He was rested for that game against Southampton, obviously, after playing a lot of the action against Arsenal in the extra-time FA Cup win on the previous Sunday. Diogo Dalot was sent off in that game after two yellow cards, so he was suspended for the Southampton game, and Joshua Xerxes coming in for Rasmus Højlund. The two other players dropping out there for United are Garnacho and Rasmus Højlund. So the starting team for United, it's Onana in goal. Yoro on the right of the centre halves with Maguire in the middle and De Ligt on the left. Masraoui, right wing back, Dalot, left wing back, and then it's Ugarte and Mainoo in central midfield, and Diallo and Fernandes will play off Joshua Xerxes.
Okay, so when your thoughts about this, Stephen, we're looking at United. The last three games to me have been very compelling: Liverpool, Arsenal and Southampton, and then Brighton have scored, what, 6 goals away from home in their last two games. This should be fun.
Yeah, I think it will be. The one thing I'd say about United, John, it's something I noticed when myself and Brian were over the game in Manchester City's Etihad Stadium. I felt that De Ligt looked a lot better outside of the anchor of the back three. He went into anchor of the back three again against Southampton, and I think United suffered. I just feel with the responsibility of being, because there is a lot of responsibility that comes with being the anchor of the back three, and I think De Ligt finds that hard to deal with, and I think it's better if you take that responsibility away from him and let him be on either side of the anchor, which is Harry Maguire. And Maguire, I know, and look, I would have been very critical of Maguire over the years. I think he has been... What would you say? He's blown hot and cold. He wouldn't be the kind of legendary totem centre back that you would associate with Manchester United, the likes of, Yap Stam, even Gary Pallister, Steve Bruce. But I think Maguire, when he dug his heels in, when there was talk of him maybe leaving the club a couple of seasons ago, and he dug his heels in, he said, no, I'm going to stay here, I'm going to fight for my place. He's shown that kind of character and determination that you want from a player in that position, and I think he's shown that he can carry that responsibility of the anchor. So with him, I suppose, flanked by De Ligt and Yoro, I think that central defensive trio looks a lot more solid, and Masraoui there giving great support as well. Now Ugarte and Mainoo, there was talk from Amarim after the game during the week that they were suffering from tiredness, that's why they came off early, so I'll be interested to see how they play, and was he maybe just protecting them from any criticism. But it is a strong enough United team, as strong as it gets, I suppose. Can Brighton break them down? Well, like Brighton do tend to play better away from home. They've got good results away from against Aston Villa, against Arsenal. But the problem for them is they're drawing too many matches. They can't seem to get that winning goal against teams. So just to look at their starting 11, John, they've made three changes as well. Dunk, Minta and Welbeck all coming back into the team. Webster, who played very well against Ipswich Town during the week, they won 2-0 away to Ipswich. He drops down to the bench. Dingra and O'Reilly as well. In fact, O'Reilly's not in the squad, so he may be carrying an injury. So the Brighton team is Verbruggen in goal, a back four, Veltman on the right, Van Ecke and Dunk in central of defence, and then Estupiñán as the left back. Baleba will play in midfield, and I think it's going to be an attacking Welbeck supporting Pedro, the centre forward, with Minta, Ayari and Matoma in the attacking midfield positions there for them. Dunk is coming back after a bit of an injury spell himself. He missed two games and he came on as a sub against Ipswich Town. Welbeck has been a sub for the last two matches. He missed six of the previous seven games with an injury, so we'll see how sharp he is in this game. And Minta coming in for his first start since that 3-1 defeat to Crystal Palace back in December. I think Minta's a very young, dynamic winger, and he can cause United a lot of problems on that right hand side. Matoma, he struggled to find that form that saw him play so well under De Zerbi, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes as well today. There's definitely a lot of threat in that Brighton team, but they are weak at the back, or they can be. They can be caught out quite a lot on the break. So yeah, I definitely think it's going to be an open and attacking game from both sides, and I think we will see a lot of goals. I'm kind of angling towards a score draw here today, John.
Okay, Stephen, thanks for now. And we're going to check in with Brian Kerr for full build-up in a short while. Not the only Premier League game today as well, Anne-Marie.
No, four games in total, and at the same time as Manchester United hosting Brighton, Everton welcome Tottenham Hotspur to Goodison Park, the Republic of Ireland's. Jake O'Brien starts there for Everton, and Shane Pinnington can fill us in on this one.
Despite a change of management, it was the same old story for Everton fans in midweek, as once again they watched their side miss a whole host of chances and then end up losing the game. That result meant it's just one Premier League win in 12 matches now, and that's something that requires addressing immediately if they're to climb clear of the drop zone. Up against them today are a Tottenham side that start today just two places above their host in the Premier League table and suffered a seventh loss in 11 games in the North London derby in midweek. The pressure's really starting to ramp up on Ange Postecoglou, but the visitors haven't lost against today's opponents in front of a crowd since 2012. And if they can maintain that record here today, they'll record a first win in six league games. At Goodison Park, it's Everton and Tottenham.
So he fancies Jake O'Brien a bit more than Sean Dyche did, David Moyes. Ashley Young on the bench and Jake O'Brien selected at right back today.
Yeah, and also at 2 o'clock, Southampton go to high-flying Nottingham Forest. We can hear from Adam Diori here.
Nottingham Forest held out for a draw against Liverpool to make it eight games unbeaten as they mount an unexpected title charge. Nuno Espirito Santo's keen to take it one game at a time, but a win here for Forest would put them second in the table. It'll be expected against the Southampton side, who, despite playing well in their defeat to Man United, look destined for the Championship. The Saints only have 6 points, and unless things change, are on course to record the lowest tally in Premier League history. It's Nottingham Forest versus Southampton at the City Ground.
Then the main game of the day is the champions, Manchester City away to Ipswich Town. Liverpool, meanwhile, sit 6 points clear at the top of the table with a game in hand. That's after substitute Darwin Nunez scored twice in injury time for them as they beat Brentford 2-0 away from home yesterday. Their manager Arne Slot praised his striker at full time.
I think he's always been he's always having a lot of impact when he comes in, because he brings a lot of energy and power. And most of our games, not all of them, but most of them, are, especially last half hour, we control, completely dominate in and around the 18-yard box, and that's where he's at his best, when we can bring the balls in. And the first hour of a game is mostly a bit more open. But last hour, most of our games, we totally dominate the game. And then to have someone like Darwin who can score a goal is nice to have on the bench. I don't only look at results, also look at performances, and because we did create a lot, but now it's a win, and probably I don't have to say now look at our performance, although apart from the win I was very pleased with our performance again. Although Brentford made it difficult for us, they have some very good players, good game plan. So it was an intense game again. I think it was, again, a nice game to watch. And that's what has been every single game Liverpool is on the pitch.
So 6 points now, the lead for Liverpool against Arsenal at the top. Nunez has only got 4 goals before yesterday, but he was sharp in the box with those two finishes in stoppage time. 37 shots in the game Liverpool had.
Yeah, and it looked like a game that they possibly were going to dominate again, as Arne Slot alludes to there, and not win. So it was a massive turnaround in injury time. And then obviously Arsenal dropped points. They let a 2-0 lead slip as they drew 2-2 with Aston Villa and their former manager Unai Emery that game at the Emirates. Gabriel Martinelli and Kai Havertz had scored for the Gunners before Yuri Tielemans and Ollie Watkins found the back of the net for the visitors. That's 12 points now that Arsenal have dropped from winning positions so far this season. And a frustrated Mikel Arteta was asked about this after the game.
Well, I think every situation is very different as well. We have come back from situations more than probably before as well. So today I think you have to give credit to the opposition. You know, they put Digne, puts an unbelievable ball, Tielemans arrives in the same one, the second one, it's nowhere near the standards that requires. And overall, again, what the game showed and how we perform and the scoreline reflection is nowhere near what it should be.
Yeah, Thomas Partey really got caught for that second goal that Watkins scored. Adrian, you were enjoying Leinster last night.
Yeah, I didn't get to see the... I did see some Paul Merson, whatever you want to call it, when I came home on the TV. He was still losing his mind about Thomas Partey at that stage. But yeah, I was at Leinster. Good game. Always really entertaining. Arrogance coming off this next comment, but like the idea of there should be like a handicap given to teams that come in like that, you know what I mean? 14 points down after whatever it was, like the opening first few minutes. Made the game. I hate to say it, but it made the game.
Well, they're sending off as well. Won the game. They would have probably won it anyway.
I think they would have won it well.
When you can take
anyway,
Snyman and Dyrus off the bench.
Amazing. Yeah, and like the quality of some of the tries, that Snyman try was off the charts, you know what I mean? And like there has been obviously a big focus on Leinster's defensive qualities under Nina Barr.
Yeah,
like
at the maybe expense of the attacking game.
Well, they've
got seven tries.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
They've won every game this season.
But a good game, yeah. Like it's always a very entertaining night. I have the kids, two kids down at the Aviva under the, you know, the fireworks are up and the floodlights are down, and you know I only had to stand up 30 times for people going out for a beer, so it was all in all pretty successful evening out.
So what we see at Ireland matches is also a feature of Leinster games.
It is. I do get it though, you know what I mean, like you can watch rugby, you could, a controversial comment possibly, but you can watch rugby in a more passive way than you might soccer, let's say, or GA.
In the build-up to a score is generally longer.
And there are times where there's a break in play, there's a tension been sought, there's a scrum, there's different facets of play. It's always the thing for me is for people who are getting up, and it wasn't always people going for a pint, there's kids and various other people up and down, knowing when to get up.
Okay.
And maybe knowing when not to get up, when there's a crucial moment.
Nothing's going to change because of the money that it generates, but I'd like to see the Aviva follow Croke Park's lead and close the bars during the game.
I would disagree with you, John. I take the point and there's a disturbance involved. I think they could do an awful lot more in the interim without having to take that step because, listen, it is nice to be able to go out of an evening and it's not, you know, everybody, you know, people go out and they enjoy a pint and I don't think that should be up for discussion. But I think that they could do an awful lot more in terms of in-stadium messaging, pre-game messaging, program messaging about knowing the right time to stand up. If there's like a crucial play, the opposition are battering down the line, or, you know, there's a crucial line, something happening that's important for people to be able to see, then just know not to go to your seat or to get up out of your seat at that time. Wait until there's a break in play because there's one coming within a minute. That would be the thing for me.
The way to stop that, though, is for me to not have the opportunity to go for booze. You can have booze before the game, you can have booze at halftime, you can have booze if you want to have booze after the game.
But you can have it as well out on the Concorde.
You can have it in the pub and watch on television. I speak for people spending their money.
I think the fact as well, you might even have to make those announcements, says a lot.
Well, I think actually
like,
what would happen
really
would be
there?
You'd have a period of like a year or whatever it would be where you'd be saying to people, this is what you need to do. Because I don't think anybody would actually disagree with that if they understood it as a culture of something to do. And then after that, that would just be it. It'd be in place. You could also have stewards saying to people, you could have them decide as people come back in. It wouldn't stop people getting out of their seat, but it would certainly stop the returning.
I just think it's a nuisance and an inconvenience for people who have spent their money to go to a match to watch a match.
I think you can get away. My point would be that I think the passiveness means, maybe passive is the wrong term, but there are an awful lot more breaks in play than there would be maybe in soccer, maybe in GAA, means that you could have it. And like, you know, one of the reasons for not serving drink in stadiums is that people end up clipping the heads off each other, which, you know, for whatever reason, and maybe a longer conversation, doesn't really tend to happen in maybe if there's a Leinster-Munster rivalry, there's a bit more of an edge about it, but those local rivalries maybe that you get in GAA, which tend to be fine too, to be fair, but maybe more so in soccer, maybe more prone to that. It doesn't tend to happen in rugby, and for that reason, I think...
Well, Leinster's next European game is going to be in Croke Park, so we won't have this problem.
It won't be there.
Yeah. What are the details then from last night?
Yeah, so obviously Leinster topped their pool and secured home advantage for their last 16 game in the Investec Champions Cup. As Adrian alluded to, Leo Cullen's side came from behind to beat Bath 47-21 at the Aviva Stadium. It's been confirmed they'll play that next game at Croke Park. Head coach Leo Cullen was particularly pleased with how his side performed after the break.
Lots of good stuff in the second half. Slightly slow start, but I think a lot of that is down to Bath and the attacking intent that they brought right from the first whistle. So they kicked off, get the ball back, moves to one side of the field, moves to the other side of the field, and Alfie Barbie scoring. So 7-0 to them, and then they score pretty quickly after that, so it's 14-0. Thankfully, we decided to kick into gear, which was good, and scored some good tries, you know, showed some good composures. Obviously, Robbie gets in for a couple of good tries. And we had lots of opportunities probably, you know, in that sort of second half of the first half, and they go down to 14 men. Eventually we score, but unfortunately we concede again just on half time. So again, some good attacking play by Bath and Finn Russell in particular. So yeah, listen, it was a proper game, wasn't it? Probably pleased how we went in the second half in terms of some of the impact, some of the bench guys in particular were good. So yeah, so what was it? We scored four good tries in the second half, so listen, we're delighted to get the win. Big thanks to the crowd there, amazing atmosphere out there. And we're on to the next stage. We'll wait and see at the end of the weekend where exactly that is, but there's a lot of really positive work has gone into the four games, and I suppose in the lead into the four games as well. So we're pleased to be out to the end of those four games.
Elsewhere then, in Pool 2, La Rochelle surprisingly lost 32-25 away to Benetton, while Munster fell just short as they lost 34-32 at Northampton, meaning they finished second in Pool 3.
Speaking about big events and big nights, Off the Ball's Rugby Roadshow at the 3 Olympia on January the 29th is now officially sold out. Tickets are no longer available to buy, but don't worry, because we've got extra giveaways for our OTB members. Keep an ear out for your chance to win on any of our members' pods. Host Owen Sheen will be joined tonight by Brian O'Driscoll, Austin Healy, Aoife Wafer, Adam Quinlan, Jerry Thornley and Andy Dunn. It's all with thanks to Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of the Ireland rugby team. Never stop competing. Don't miss out as well on future OTB events. Sign up now for advance notice and pre-sale tickets at offtheball.com/insider. And stay tuned to the OTB social channels for more. It is Leeds 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0, so a victory would send Leeds back to the top of the Championship, 73 minutes on the watch at Anand Road in the Women's Super League halftime. Tottenham 1, Leicester 0. Tyrrell Hatton has won the Dubai Desert Classic 15 under par, a final round of 69, enough for a one-shot win over Daniel Hillier. Rory McIlroy ending in a tie for fourth at 66. The route he took today to a 12 under par finish. Tom McKibben could be going to live 11 under par. His final round of 69, all rounds under par, tied for sixth. Not a bad week for Tom as well as Rory. We also have the Australian Open ongoing. Anne-Marie, any shocks today?
No, pretty standard day. 24-time Grand Slam champion Novak Djokovic through to the quarterfinals. That's after he beat his Czech opponent in straight sets this morning. He'll face Wimbledon champion Carlos Alcaraz in the last eight. He received a walkover after British player Jack Draper had to withdraw with a hip injury. Second seed Alexander Zverev then is also through to the next round. He beat Frenchman Hugo Humbert. So the top dogs all advancing pretty easily. In the women's draw, kind of the same story then. Top seed Aryna Sabalenka and American Coco Gauff both progressing.
We have a huge weekend for basketball in this country as well.
Liffey Celtics face Colchester in the Paddy O'Connor National Cup final at the National Basketball Arena this evening. That's at 5:30. Last night, Colchester's men won their sixth Pat Duffy National Cup with a 92-75 points win over UCC Demons. There is snooker as well this afternoon. It's an all-English affair. World number two Kyron Wilson is facing Sean Murphy in the Masters final. The first to 10 frames claims that Alexandra Palace will win the title. And there is also racing ongoing this afternoon in Thurles. And the Willie Mullins trained Blood Destiny is expected to go off the favourite in the feature. That's the Grade 2 Horse and Jockey Hotel Chase, which is at 2:05.
The opening maiden hurdle at Thurles went to Scalp Nagoon, 15-8 for trainer Gordon Elliott and jockey Danny Gilligan. And then the novice hurdle was won by Milforce at a price of 9-2 for Keith Donoghue, riding for Gavin Cromwell at Thurles today. Also racing at Windsor to look out for as well this afternoon. 2 weeks out to the Six Nations. Can you hard to believe, really?
Yeah. Where are Ireland going to finish, Jedi? I had a conversation with Ger on breakfast during the week about this whole thing. It's very uncertain.
My answer is behind France.
Yeah, second or third.
Third.
France first.
Behind France.
Maybe well,
it's a bit like when Eddie Jones came to town in 2019 after the year we had and the amazing 2018 we had. We were number one in the world. We beat New Zealand. We'd won the Grand Slam and we got ambushed. It's the first game again. So the England game will set the tone in a huge...
And you don't know what England are turning up is the other thing as well. Yeah. They obviously swapped captains during the week, which I thought was an interesting concept so far.
Maro Toje in there now as well. So yeah. Yeah, I mean, look...
You wouldn't be surprised if Ireland finished third or first.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if they finished first.
Would you?
Yeah.
Just because of...
I think this team peaked... October 2023.
Well, we're going to see like Donegal, early Donegal 2012, Amory, is what's going to happen for Ireland, the Six Nations, the defensive mindset. And
I said on Twitter last night that Jack Crowley has had some fortnight and I don't care really what happens with, I don't want to see this winners and losers debate anymore about the out-halves or any other position in the team. It's all about, for me, Australia in 2027. And if we come out of the Six Nations, we come out of this year with a load of new names or a load of new players that we didn't know before, like Thomas Clarkson, we didn't know in the autumn, for example.
Gus McCarthy.
Then I'll definitely be happier.
Yeah, but France have a very familiar name coming back, which is worrying.
Yes.
That's the asterisk beside all of this. It's like the cheat code, isn't he?
Yeah.
DuPont.
I can't see France not winning.
Yeah.
I agree.
Adrian, Barry and Amory, Donald, thank you so much for the news round this Sunday. So we've got to take a break. We're going to be back in a moment. Brian Kerr to build up to our first Premier League commentary of the day. Manchester United against Brighton. Stay with us.
Off the Ball Daily.
Off the Ball Rugby.
I question that theory and I wonder come the biggest games whether it will be the undoing of Leinster, as in the end it was in the final, because Toulouse are taking their game on.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.